Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, News Radio. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, 810, and Julio Diaz joins us. He is the host of the Pensacola Movie Club. On Thursdays, they watch a movie and talk about it, and then he hosts a show on Saturday called Let's Go Pensacola at 4 o'clock here on News Radio. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So we previewed this last week. You said you guys were going to, you know, the movie you would probably focus on was Inside Out 2. This is the sequel, of course, and...
Yeah, so this is, I guess it's been a while since the first one. I want to say it's been like, what, 10, 15 years, something like that?
Has it?
But in cartoon time, it hasn't been that long. So,
Cartoons don't have to age in real time.
Right. But they do, but there is an age gap here, because in the first film, Riley is the little girl whose head we're inside with all the emotions. Was a very young girl, and now she's like going into high school. She's like a preteen.
Okay.
So she's aged a little bit, and that means that new emotions are coming into the operation center in her head. So it's about the emotions that we know from the first movie, dealing with all these new emotions like anxiety and apathy or ennui.
And there's an emotion called ennui. I love it. All right, go on.
There is. Yeah. So Riley, you know, in Riley's life, she's dealing with the things that you deal with when you're becoming a teenager and how that affects her mindscape inside.
Huh.
Great reviews on this, running 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. So apparently just about as good as the first one.
No, that's really good. Anytime a sequel can compete with the original, that's great. Tuesday is another movie that's out today.
Yeah, pretty good reviews on this one as well. This stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus as a mother, and her child have to deal with the specter of death that comes to them in the form of a talking bird. It's kind of a weird premise, but the reviews are pretty good on this, 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. My understanding, I haven't seen it myself yet, but my understanding is that it's kind of divisive. It's one of those movies you either love it or you hate it, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus is apparently amazing in this movie.
Okay, yeah, I mean, she's a fantastic actor. And then the third one that we're getting is Firebrand, which is, Jude Law and Alicia Vikander?
Right. So this is the sixth wife of Henry VIII. Of course, if you're familiar with Henry VIII, you know that he's very famous for not having the kindest disposal system for former wives, let's put it that way.
One for the rest of her life.
Yeah, no. You're, well, one for the rest of her life.
Her life.
Baby.
That's right. No, I had it wrong. That's his life. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So this is Alicia Vikander is the woman that becomes his sixth wife.
Okay.
And, you know, she knows going into this that it's kind of a fraught position. It becomes even more fraught when he goes off to fight in foreign lands and leaves her as the regent. She's got to run the country. So it deals with all of that. Unfortunately, you know, it sounds like a good premise. It's a great cast. Reviews are only kind of middling on this one, running 48% on that.
I will say this. It might have one of my favorite taglines ever. Firebrand. Henry VIII had six wives. One survived. If that doesn't get your attention, I'm not sure what would. What are you guys going to watch next week, Julio?
Probably going to be looking at The Bike Riders, which is a movie that's been kind of delayed for some time, but I think that was more because of the strike than because of any kind of quality issues. This
okay.
is with Austin Butler, who, of course, was Oscar-nominated for playing Elvis a year or so ago.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like it's going to be pretty good, so looking forward to that one.
Very good. You can find out more information, join them for the movie and the discussion on Facebook, follow the Pensacola Movie Club, and then, of course, listen tomorrow at 4 o'clock on Saturdays on News Radio, where he talks about everything that's going on in the world of pop culture and entertainment. Julio Diaz is always...
Yeah, it's going to actually be our second part of our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame analysis that we've been doing. Last week, we talked about the inductees for this year. This week, we're going to be talking about a bunch of overlooked artists that that aren't in yet, that either haven't been nominated or just haven't been inducted, that are way overdue.
Oh, cool. Very good. You can listen to that tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Let's go Pensacola. Julio, as always, my friend, thank you for the time and thank you for the perspective on the movies and entertainment, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 8:14 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. Coming up next, we have the Transgressive Memorial Service. If you are thinking about whether it's time to sell your home or to buy one, or to do both, because it's common enough for people to do both, I recommend Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty. Outstanding realtor, sold 175 homes last year. Not too shabby. Not too shabby. For somebody who used to work in the news business and, then started a family and decided to go into real estate. And, you know, we all who know her thought, well, I guess if anybody can do it, she's got a good chance. But you never really know until somebody does it, because real estate's hard. And, 50 homes, and then 100 homes, and then 175 homes last year. And you're like, oh, yeah, she's doing okay. She kind of knows how to do this. So you have questions. She will answer them. She'll help you think of better questions. And just make sure through the whole process that you get the best possible outcome buying or selling. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty, 723-9158. We got traffic on the fives now with John Pickens.
That's right. If you're traveling on I-110 and you want to get off on the Davis Highway ramp, well, we've got a disabled vehicle that's blocking the lane. So definitely use caution. My advice, get off at Airport Boulevard and take Davis up if you need to go that way. Other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
When the open road or off-road calls, the 2024 Subaru Forester answers. Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. The impressive off-road capability of the Forester Wilderness starts with its dependable symmetrical all-wheel drive. It optimizes power distribution between the wheels to deliver maximum traction on challenging trails or in slippery weather conditions. Pair that with 9.2 inches of ground clearance and standard Yokohama Geolander AT all-terrain tires, and you'll feel free to explore even farther down the trail. Plus, the Forester Wilderness comes with a full-size spare, a rare sight these days. The Forester Wilderness makes it easy to load up for adventure with an extra-wide rear gate opening and 60-40 split fold-down rear seat. And its interior protective material stands up to wear and tear from all that gear, passengers, and pets. The Forester Wilderness is built for your boldest adventures. Find yours at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at George Stone Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from George Stone Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknights 7 to 10 before WEAR-TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the television show Wheel of Fortune. As most of you by now know, after 41 years of hosting Wheel, Pat Sajak recently retired. In a fair world, this would have provided an excellent opportunity for the game show hosting community to finally prove it's not just a boys' club, if they had hired the beloved and talented Vanna White for the position. Instead, the job was given to the champion of the insert generic white male TV show host name here contest, Ryan Seacrest. This snub alone would justify canceling Wheel, but in thinking about this show, we suddenly realized what a genuine horror spectacle we were watching. As described in the Dish Network program guide, Wheel of Fortune is, quote, a classic game show version of Hangman, in which contestants solve word problems for cash and prizes. Hangman? Oh, this will not do. Now, although it's true enough that Wheel of Fortune contestants don't compete against the morbid spectacle of a child gradually constructing a stick figure hanging by a rope from the government gallows, surely you see that Wheel of Fortune is a gateway game to such disturbing entertainment. And as our religion rightly condemns the moral atrocity of any government depriving someone of their right to life, we cannot countenance anything that would simulate such a thing as entertainment. Surely, children, should they really be drawing corpses that begin as disembodied heads, necks, bodies, arms, legs, and sometimes feet? Of course not. And just consider what color the hanged man normally is. Drawn with a pencil, the body is usually black in color, portrayed on the backdrop of white paper, whose simulated life depends on some Jim Crow era game of spelling for your life that's clearly designed to remind children that at one time whites repressed freed slaves by refusing to teach them their letters? Oh no, dear Utherin. Even if Vanna had been given the job of host rather than continuing as the eye candy letter illuminator object of misogynistic fantasy, the association of Wheel of Fortune with such a racist and violent children's game would be more than enough to outweigh the good. Wheel! No! Longer! Is our newest chant. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, it's time to implement level 2 sanctions against TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods stores for placing body cameras on all of their employees. The problem here, of course, is that they are doing this to reduce shoplifting, a very backward, judgmental, and bigoted term that serves to reinforce the repressive capitalist culture we suffer under by pretending that concepts like private property and ownership are anything but mechanisms for the patriarchy to keep repressing our proletarian brethren, sistren, and otherin. Since we are firm believers in property liberation, whether through redistributionist taxation or through five-finger discountification, we definitely hate to see anything that inhibits the reappropriation of goods from the store haves to the shopper have-nots go into effect. However, there is a silver lining here. We do appreciate another significant step being made towards the complete modern surveillance state, in which everyone learns to be afraid all the time because everything they do or say is being recorded by someone for evaluation, judgment, and potential cancellation. When the Wokalizer 4000 artificial intelligence system finally deploys next year, any person caught on any video mouthing disfavored words or ideas can be immediately docked social media credits or escalated to a crisis response team who can be tasked with other, more serious penalties. Since the heretics among us will certainly resist this threat-based pathway to our utopian virtue state, we must get them comfortable with cameras everywhere first before we can really convert technology to the cause of compulsory truth-speaking. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to celebrate the work being done by the Indian River County School Board in southeastern Florida, who recently decided to remove from their school libraries Alan Gratz's book, Ban This Book. For those of you unfamiliar, Ban This Book is the fictional story of a fourth grade girl named Amy Ann who attends a school, much like those in Indian River, where many books have been removed from the library. In response, she starts bringing the contraband literature to school herself and running an underground lending library of her own to her fellow students, sharing verboten reading materials with them from her locker. Well, when the Indian River School Board heard about this book, they immediately voted to remove it because, as they said, quote, the title itself and the theme challenges our authority, and because, quote, teaching the rebellion of school board authority is not good. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. How can we be celebrating a Florida school board which has removed so many of the books we celebrate, especially those affirming participation in the most pure and holy acronym string, LGBTQIA2S+, as of this morning? Indian River for sure has been homophobic, biphobic, transphobic, queerphobic, two-spirit-phobic, and even math symbol-phobic in their censorship. In this, we of course oppose them. But don't you see? The core message of rebellion against authority in this properly banned book is unacceptable. The one place we wokists agree with those horrid groups like Moms for Liberty is that we firmly believe in telling people what to think and demanding that they submit their impure minds to our collective authority. If a child can stand up for herself and disobey the administrators of her school, then what's to stop the journalist, or the radio host, or the blogger, or the comedian from standing up for themselves and saying hurtful words in disobedience to the wise and true collective will of our thought leaders and cancellation dispensers? So even though most of their book bans are in error, in this one case, We celebrate you, Indian River County School Board, for making the world safer for authoritarianism by squelching free speech, including free speech about free speech. Bravo! Hear, hear! Woe unto all who offend!
Woe unto all who offend!
As you depart today, please pick up a map to the protest we're staging tonight outside the sports bar showing the NBA Finals Game 3 between the Mavericks and the Celtics. Although we certainly have many issues with professional sports, this protest will focus on our one demand that we stop calling it the National Basketball Association and instead commence referring to it as the Men's National Basketball Association. You see, right now we have the NBA and the WNBA, but this obviously lends itself to the idea that the NBA is the normal or common organization for basketball and that the WNBA is somehow different or divergent from the norm. And we say this genderist microaggression via acronym choice is not acceptable. Just imagine if the NCAA had women's soccer and soccer, instead of women's soccer and men's soccer. You don't have women's gymnastics and regular gymnastics, you have women's gymnastics and men's gymnastics. And this is obvious, because we don't want to promote the sexist notion that somehow sports are a male domain by default, and that therefore women's sports is the addition, the asterisk, the variant, the modifier, or the afterthought. No. So, to remedy this insignificant significance, we simply demand that the NBA rename itself as the MNBA and stop promoting the lie that the men's league is too good for one extra letter in their acronym. The protest starts at 6 p.m. Be sure to bring your protest posters and your tambourines. Refreshments this week are provided by Cotton Pick and Not So Good, a healthy and nutritious fiber replacement snack bar made from a patented 40-60 blend of pulverized corn cobs and dried corn husks. In an effort to human cycle the millions of tons of corn waste generated each year, these gluten-free human chew toys serve as both the ideal breakfast bar and a perfect colonoscopy aid. Cotton Pick and Not So Good. You can really taste the virtue.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
826 here on News Radio Pensacola. John Pickens, not affiliated with Cotton Picking, not so good, by the way.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Yeah. Okay. No. It's hard to follow that up every Friday. I'm like, I can't. All right. Anyway, just if you're traveling on Highway 29 between Kingsfield and West Roberts Road, southbound, you're going to see an accident there. It's off to the side of the road, but we're seeing some delays on Highway 29 in both the north and south direction. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly right now. Everything's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. Somebody texted in to remind me that the fishing tournament, the billfish tournament, is today. Weigh-in starts at, really starts at 3, but the big boats with their big fish are probably going to come more in the 7 o'clock and thereafter. They got to be on deck waiting at 8:30. That's when they close access to the weigh-in. And we did talk to Robo Wibbs earlier this morning about that. And yeah, big thing. If you've never been out to it, go see it. It's a kind of an interesting experience. Let's see. We've got David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, there's some reports out saying former President Trump called Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a horrible city. I can't blame him, honestly. I have a grudge against the whole state of Wisconsin.
Do
that's
you?
That's another story.
That sounds like a football rivalry to me.
Well, it's much more, but yes, that too.
I'm the one from Illinois. If anybody should hate Wisconsin, I think I'm closer.
But Wisconsin Republicans are rushing to the defense of the former president after those comments were reportedly made during a closed-door meeting on Capitol Hill yesterday. Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orden said Trump was specifically referring to the crime rate in Milwaukee.
All right.
The head of the FAA says the agency's oversight of Boeing was too hands-off before those incidents involving the company's planes happened earlier this year. In a Senate Commerce Committee hearing yesterday, FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker said they should have had much better visibility into what was happening at Boeing before January 5th. That's when the door plug incident happened. And Father's Day weekend is coming up, and consumers are expected to spend roughly $22 billion on Father's Day gifts. The National Retail Federation says the average price of a Father's Day gift this year is $190.
Now, Is that $190 roughly the amount you spend on dinner taking dad out that he pays for?
Either that or this inflation has really knocked up the price of socks.
That's right. You said knocked up. That's funny.
I know, right?
Dave, thanks so much for the update. 829 News Radio Pensacola. Oh, speaking of that billfish tournament, I think it's Robo or Brian. Somebody sent me a picture of one of the fish that's coming in. Holy smokes. I mean, this is the largest blue marlin over 700 pounds can win $35,000 from Step One Buick GMC Pensacola Cadillac. But man, I'm looking at this fish thinking, good Lord, that is a giant fish. Okay. All right. So, you know, we'll see this afternoon. Anyway, 829 here on News Radio Pensacola. What else do we have going on? Small note. Okay. The Supreme Court issued a ruling that yesterday, I think is not. There used to be a time in America, at least I'd like to believe so, when, you know, the newsroom would have a religion reporter who knew about religion, and the newsroom would have a legal reporter who knew about law stuff. And I think these days what we have is maybe not so much that. And, for example, the way this story is being told is that the Supreme Court has sided with women and preserved their access to mifepristone, the abortion medication. That's not what the Supreme Court decided. They simply ruled that the plaintiffs in this case had no standing, which was the correct decision. They were right about that. That means that the lawsuit, they don't have standing. They can't bring the complaint. Somebody else might be able to. The drug still eventually might be struck down for other reasons. This is a purely technical dismissal.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. The president, the pope, and the prime minister topping today's G7 meeting in Italy. Conservative Giorgia Meloni greets first-time G7 speaker Pope Francis. The Catholic President Biden gets a one-on-one. The three disagree on summit issues of migration and abortion access. House Speaker Mike Johnson talking about a new energy after Donald Trump's first Capitol Hill meeting with Republicans since leaving office. Trump agrees, telling Fox.
Great meeting. There's tremendous unity in the Republican Party.
On this Flag Day, the story of a California middle schooler expelled from Catholic school for violating their Christian code by refusing to take out patriotic references in a speech. Jimmy Hayward tells Fox.
I know that I stood up for what was right, and I don't get how anybody could think that what I did was wrong and how standing up for America is wrong.
America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. 81 degrees. The sun shining this morning. And a huge partnership between the city of Milton, Santa Rosa County, and NAS Whiting Field was made official yesterday. An interlocal support agreement signed by Santa Rosa County, the city of Milton, and NAS Whiting Field representatives at yesterday's Board of County Commissioners
meeting.
Today marks
a significant milestone in our longstanding partnership. Not only between the city of Milton and NAS Whiting Field, but also with the county. For more than 80 years, our city has cherished its relationship, and not only with the busiest aviation complex in the world, but also the best small base in the Navy. And it's always been an honor to be part in some way of the mission that happens at NAS Whiting Field.
That is Milton City Councilman Casey Powell. The agreement, a show of support for both the military and the community. NAS Whiting Field officials say they will use local services and materials for on-base projects whenever it's possible, which will reduce costs for the base and benefit the local economy. Former Escambia County Commissioner Doug Underhill has now been cleared of ethics violation complaints. Those were made last year by David Baer, the chairman of Triumph Golf Coast's board and also the CEO of the Lewis Baer Company. The complaints involved filing inaccurate financial disclosure forms after Underhill had left office. The News Journal reports that the Ethics Commission ruled there was no probable cause for the complaints and dismissed them. Underhill previously faced an ethics complaint that was dismissed in September of last year. And in 2020, he was hit with a trio of complaints, which resulted in a $35,000 fine. Florida Highway Patrol says they're still looking for information on a fatal hit and run that killed a bicyclist just about a year ago now. That crash happened in June of 2023. A silver or white SUV hit a 61-year-old man on a bicycle that was riding on Sorrento approaching Blue Angel. Troopers say the SUV would most likely have sustained damage to the front windshield. FHP is looking for somebody who either had their windshield replaced around that time or parks and hides a vehicle with tarps or in a secluded area. The FAA looking at what impact SpaceX launches might have on the environment. The federal The federal agency held a public information meeting yesterday at the Kennedy Space Center. The FAA says they're studying how Starship and Super Heavy launches could potentially affect air and water quality. The Escambia Sheriff's Office is having their free community movie night tonight. That's going to happen at the Dixon School of Arts and Sciences on North H Street.
We start at 5:30. We'll serve free hamburgers, free hot dogs, and then we'll show a movie at 6 o'clock. I don't know the name of the movie, but it's going to be a great movie. We use our big screen. It was donated to us by the Escambia County Sheriff Foundation to allow us to have these movie nights.
Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons told News Radio about the movie night earlier this week. On their social media event page, the movie is listed as being Sing 2 tonight. Again, that's going to be at the Dixon School of Arts and Sciences at 5:30 tonight. Sheriff Simmons says money for the hamburgers and hot dogs is actually taken from funds that were confiscated by drug dealers. So no tax money is spent on that event. It is 8:35 at News Radio Pensacola. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. If you're on Pine Forest Road and Detroit Boulevard, you're going to see a hit-and-run crash there. It's moved onto the side of the road, but I'm still seeing delays. I-10, I-110, all flowing smoothly right now. That's a look at your traffic on the fives. I'm John Pickens.
We are going to have a beautiful sunny day today with mostly sunny skies, high near 94 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. Keeping the weather nice and sunny on Saturday with a high near 95. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 78. For Sunday, 50% chance of rain, high near 90 degrees. Low Sunday night near 78. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now we've got 81 degrees in Pensacola, 77 in Gulf Breeze, 80 in Milton. And your money now. This morning, the markets are down. The Dow is down 146 points at 38,579. S&P down 19 points, just about, at 54,1538. NASDAQ down 52 points at 17,617.48. 10-year bond rate down a bit at 4.22% today. Gold price is up $26.60 at $23.44.60. Silver price is up 21 cents at $29.28 this morning. And Bitcoin is up $541 at $67,160. Apple is now the most valuable public company in the United States. On Thursday, Apple moved past Microsoft in that list when their shares rose 6%, and the market cap closed at $3.29 trillion. The Supreme Court, siding with Starbucks in a major labor dispute over seven employees that were fired in Memphis.
The employees, known as the Memphis Seven, claimed they were fired in 2022 for trying to unionize their Tennessee Starbucks. The National Labor Relations Board issued a complaint saying Starbucks fired them to discourage employees from engaging in these activities and asked a federal judge for an injunction reinstating the workers. Starbucks then took the case to the Supreme Court. On Thursday, the High Court put limits on the NLRB's authority and returned the case to the lower courts. I'm Michael Kastner.
Thank you very much, Michael. And Wallet Hub out with a new study that reveals the best and worst states for working dads this year. The top five best places in this, again, according to Wallet Hub, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., Connecticut, New Jersey, and Minnesota. The worst states for working dads, again, according to Wallet Hub, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, and South Carolina. They say they compared 21 key indicators, everything from the average length of the workday to childcare costs and overall health of men. It's 8:37. Our next news at 9. We have breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio, Pensacola.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
To the hip, the hip, the hip, 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 hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. That means it's the end of the week here on the Pensacola Morning News, and we have a couple of friends here in studio to talk about the news from the week. In this case, Josh Newby, who is the executive director. I always forget.
Yeah, executive director.
President, CEO, and executive director are all synonyms to me.
Yeah.
So,
and definitely the most notable person in the room, I'll say.
No, I've just left it right there. I've left it for you to live in it.
Okay, thank you.
Council on Aging in West Florida. Oh, how did Senior Chillout turn out?
It was great. We've distributed to 400 seniors. When it's all said and done, we'll have distributed to about 650.
Great. Outstanding. Yep. I was out there last week with you and talking
right.
about that. The other person in the room that he was throwing shade at and having fun with is a former mayor of Pensacola who now works at Pensacola State College, Grover Robinson.
Glad to be here, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, tell me again what you do at PSC.
I'm in charge of government community relations.
Okay, which if only you knew something about government, then I could see how that role would fit for you.
Why'd they hire you?
Former commissioner, former mayor. I think it's sort of a fit. And what, 23rd generation Pensacolian? Is that right?
I'm seventh. My children are eighth.
Only,
so yes.
Only seven, he says.
Lord.
Right. So one of the things that's come up this week, we're talking with the mayor about this, and it comes up periodically. You know, somebody had sent me a picture the other morning of the line around the corner at the airport for TSA, and boy, it sucks when you have to wait too long. I will say this, and you know, he's like, well, okay, but you know, 30 other pictures any other day, you know, and any other time, even of that day. But it's true. Like, they had four machines and two went down all of a sudden. They had enough staff, but if you don't have the machines, you can't run the process. So we're working on it. But this is the kind of problem you want, right? You want not too few. Well, you want not mobile, right?
Absolutely. And I think this is being a victim of your own success. I mean, we certainly saw this when I was mayor and we began this process going forward. The exciting part is this continuing to get funding is moving forward, because this can be a heavy lift. But we said, you know, rather than, you know, we were just talking about before we went into COVID, we were just going to do additional parking spaces. And then we came out of COVID and we were like, no. We need to do a whole new, we need more places, more gates, more everything. We need to do the whole thing. And we made that move, and it's good to see it continuing and progressing. The unfortunate part is you have to live in what is there. And I mean, I was very clear to people, it's going to take years down the road for us to get there. We are going to get there. But it is going to be a little painful as we go through it. But I'd much rather have that problem than, you know, things just crickets at the airport. I mean, that's a whole different part. It is not – the airport is unbelievable, the volume that it is doing
right now.
It
just keeps breaking records all the time. And, you know, you see it in the experience of it, which, as you say, is a good thing. But you were telling me off the air, we're talking a little bit about this, that getting airport, like at the terminal, which we got funding, that came through, right? That came through from the governor. Something, a lot of things got cut, but that came through. And that process is kind of like building a new school. Like, you've got to be suffering for a while with overcapacity before they'll even consider letting you build a new school.
Yeah, because you go through a process, you're going to require not only the state stuff, but you're going to require FAA. And they tend to not, you know, they always say, well, you're not planning far enough. I always like, whether it's the traffic or something like the airport, the local government has doing that. But generally, the places that they're going to need either their approval from or their funding from at the state or federal will not do it until you're absolutely busting at the seams. And then they come in and they tell you, yes, we'll now give you permission. We'll give you funding. Again, City of Pensacola for a long time has been saying we need to get another terminal. So again, it's a process where it unfortunately it takes so long because they won't give it to you right away. When you first say, I see the problem, they give it to you after it's kind of painful for a while.
Why is government funding that way? I've always noticed this difference, because some things the government will fund very proactively. I think about the military, whereas some things like civic infrastructure, they, like you said, they wait until the problem is so bad. Why?
Well, I would just, one part I disagree with is I would say in the military, we fund highly, but we don't necessarily fund wisely. And for example, shipbuilding capacity.
Yeah.
We have waited until we are now in a crisis versus China in shipbuilding capacity.
That's where we are in airports, too.
And that's where we are. Right. So I don't know that the military has been done well as opposed to, it seems to be an across the board government problem.
That's fair.
I think it's just the case of there's only so much money, and it's hard to justify all the places that it goes, it can go to. So it kind of ends up working. I mean, that was sort of the thing we talked about before coming in here. Some of the things that happened through the process of the veto, you know, it's just sometimes these things happen. You want to get everything. Every area of Florida is growing, so everybody needs funding. The problem is, and I think in some ways it's wisely, the state of Florida just isn't out spending crazy. They're thinking about what happens, but it does.
I mean, $1 billion here and $1 billion there adds up eventually.
The state,
right?
But Grover, the state has a healthy surplus. And
but that won't persist,
years.
Right? The federal money that made some of that possible, that's not going to persist quite the same way.
I mean,
and the needs are enormous.
Their savings are less than they were a year or two ago, but it's still a very healthy savings account.
They have money. What I would argue in my position is the best way to continue to make sure that you see progress and more money coming into the future is the best way is investment in education.
Right.
So we would say that for what we do at the college and certainly university and regular education system. So now is the time you should be investing in those. But I get it. I understand there, you know, it can't go all the way around. I mean, it is unfortunate in some ways. It does seem like we could be better. But, you know, there are a lot of airports that need stuff. We definitely need it. It's kind of one of those things that turns around. It comes around. It even comes around here. I mean, people talk about different park infrastructure the city of Pensacola has had. I mean,
right.
People would complain, but I said, hey, while I was there, we took care of, we got a whole new pool over mm-hmm. there underneath the interstate.
110.
Yeah.
The Hunter pool.
We did mm-hmm. exactly the Hunter pool. We did all the stuff we did all the things at McGee Field. We did all, you know, just going through a list of
the needs
you
are
can't
large,
get everywhere.
Many, yeah.
You can't get everywhere. And it tends to be, you kind of move, you hit this one and then you move on to the next one that's most critical, even though they all may need it. We hit Gull Point. We did stuff there. And again, not everybody uses it, but the people who do use it in the neighborhood, it is in the city. It is wherever these things are, they are utilized. And it just takes time when you're that big to go through the whole process. Now, I'm not going to disagree with you. I wish in some ways that they would spend a little bit more on the surplus because
right.
I would argue investing in education is probably the best thing you could do.
Well, PSC missed out on a major workforce development
right,
building
right.
that
I mean,
was
it,
a couple, what, $10 or $12 million,
it was
right?
$13 million. Yeah. I mean,
and UWF missed out on a big one, too.
Yeah, and the engineering stuff would have been great, and that would have been – those are things we definitely need in this area. So it's unfortunate. I wish we could have gotten all those. I mean – there's no doubt we were very lucky through the legislative process. We probably never would have gotten there without having Senator Broxson where he was.
I totally agree.
But I think the governor kind of moved through to be a leveler across the state, and mm-hmm. I think that's why we didn't see – it wasn't as great a day as we got through the legislature. He sort of leveled things out across there. You know,
it was woo-hoo at the end of session, and it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe more like cool.
But I said that to you
a
coming in.
At the end.
I said that to you. It's hard. We're so much prisoners of the moment of where we are.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, our priority ask was the insurance that we could be in there. The governor approved that. He approved the money that we were going to do the implementation. He vetoed the money that was in this year's budget. So it means we wait 6 months more than we expected, 12 months more than we expected. We don't like it, but at the end of the day, the things we really wanted passed through. At the end
and
of the
I,
day,
I do love what you said about, you know, we really did get a lot.
We got a lot.
It's just that we had been hoping for the even more than a lot,
right.
which didn't quite come through. We got Grover Robinson here in studio, Josh Newby. Josh, I've rarely had the experience of hearing you get drowned out by your fellow participants.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Well, I'm usually drowned out by you, Andrew.
Yes, you're such a wilting flower.
Yeah.
John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're on 29 just south of West 9 Mile Road and Pine Forest Road in Detroit, seeing an accident there. Let's see. It's blocking your way to get it on I-10 westbound, so just be aware of that. Other than that, I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the election because I will say it this way. The way Florida does qualifying primaries and general elections is, what's the word I want? Insane. It's terrible.
Right.
The most terrible is the idea that these shadow ghost candidates mm-hmm. can file, qualify, spend the money, what, $500,000, whatever it is, and close off a big slice of the electorate from being able to participate in a primary. And just, you know, for example, we've got, let's see, where
just
do we
a have? Random
let's,
example.
Let's pick a couple of examples. Commissioner for District 1. Okay. Well, actually, I want to come to that one next. Commissioner for District 5. We've got Stephen Barry is qualified, of course, for re-election. And now we have Rafael Lopez, a no party. Not him. Joshua Robertson, no party affiliate. So we're going to have a general election. We have a contest. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that person. I hope he's a sincere candidate, but I don't know whether that's the case or not. And you always have to ask because it's really hard to tell. In District 3, unless something really changes, if John Johnson qualifies, then it'll be him versus Lumen May. Otherwise, Lumen's going to get reelected, you know, without any opposition. Mm-hmm. In District 1, things are super weird this year. So we had Steve Stroberger, who had been the chief of staff for Mike Kohler, and then he resigned that position to run because of the Jonathan Owens rule, where he had previously been the chief of staff for Doug Underhill, and then he ran against Jeff Bergosh, and they made a rule that if you run against a county commissioner, you have to resign your seat, your employment. So he had resigned, and he started running. Just yesterday, Jesse Casey, who had run against Jeff in the past and had run against Jeff and Jonathan in the past and had been working as Jeff's chief of staff, has now resigned. Well, he's not resigned. He's on long-term leave, which is allowed. And he's filed to run. And you have a guy named Tyler Alger, who nobody has any idea who this person is. At least I don't. Nobody I've talked to does. But he is a qualified write-in. And what that means is you had a primary that would have been open. Everybody could have voted in the primary, voted for Bergosh or Stroberger, anybody living in District 1. Then Tyler joined, and so now only Republicans vote in the primary, which is the only election that matters in District 1. Whoever wins that wins the overall. Now that Jesse's in, you don't even have to win the majority of the primary. You just have to win a plurality, which is what Jeff has won the last couple of times. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it could be that Jesse really thinks he's got a chance. But come on, he's been working as the employee of Jeff Bergosh all this time. Nobody really believes that. You know, this system is terrible.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges are the plurality system. I will say this. I've run in that system, and I've run in what the city does. And what the city does, however you feel about one way or the other, everybody votes, and you have to get 50%. Mm-hmm. And it really changes the dynamics of how you run and what you have to do. It's so much of a different election than the rest of them are.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably a more truer sense of
you actually represent a majority of the electorate.
Correct.
Yeah. Like
correct.
D.C., if he had not won a majority when he was running with four people, he would have had to win again in the general election. He got more than 50%.
I got a plurality the first time,
right,
but still had to go into the next
round. Is that a charter difference?
Correct.
It is a city charter difference. Okay.
The other reason that happens is it's no party affiliate. You do not run as a Republican or.
So you don't have party primaries in the city.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, it's anti-democratic. It benefits
in both senses.
Yes. Yes, yes,
senses.
That's right.
Oh, but I mean, same problem in District 3. Like when Lumen ran against his brother last time around.
Right.
I'm a Republican. I didn't get to vote in the primary, and by the general, there was one person.
I think that's different because I think Lumen won like 92%. So there's a clear
of the Democrats.
But he is.
Well,
saying,
that's a Democrat. Well, but
that's a much more even district than you think.
You can't go back and forth. You got to be fair.
You're right.
And so I mean, that's what I was.
But you're right. It's
say.
Undemocratic in both senses. You were going to say.
Yeah. But I just it helps those in power. I don't understand how we got here. Well, I guess I know how we got here. The cynical part of me knows how we got here. But Jeff Bergosh knows that he's deeply unpopular in his district. He knows this is the only way to win, to game the system. But unfortunately, there's nothing. I mean, I'm not a District 1 District 1 resident, but there's nothing the people can do to really have a representative voice on the commission.
And also, I mean, look, maybe he runs against Stephen Stroberger and wins heads up.
Sure,
you never know
him.
Until you run the election.
Good
maybe he
him.
Knocks more doors. Maybe people don't like Stephen. Who knows?
Right.
But when you run a one-on-one or when you run, you have to get a majority, then at least you have a result that you know.
Right.
But instead, what you're going to have here, most likely, let's imagine that Jeff gets reelected. Commissioner Bergosh gets reelected. He gets, let's say, 40% of the vote. You'll never know whether the other 60 would have been happier with an other person or whether they split their opposition among the two candidates. That's the problem.
Now, the only thing I will say is, and I have no idea anything that's happened. I hear what y'all saying on the District 1. I'm not involved in it one way or the other. The only thing I will say is you got to be mad at the rules because If you play within the rules and you make things happen, then those are the rules. And
the manipulation of the rules by some candidates to get their friend to put up $1,000 to file for a seat so that the Democrats can't vote in the election because it's a primary, that kind of stuff drives me insane.
It may drive you insane, but it is the rule that
is
the problem.
I agree, it's the rule.
But that speaks to a character flaw then, that they're willing to exploit the rule in order to stay in power.
I will tell you this, I was actually really impressed that this hadn't happened in District 1 yet. I was like, oh, we're going to have Jeff and Steven. It's a heads-up match. Cool.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, I'm like, people. Yeah. The other one that's kind of interesting is kind of a last-minute change is that your subsequent commissioner, when you moved to be the mayor and Robert Bender ran for District 4, he then got moved into the seat vacated by David Stafford to be the supervisor of elections. And that looked like it would be an uncontested race, except for, you had Carrie Young was running, but she didn't qualify. And so now you have he is running, but there's been opposition filed against him because now Pam Childers' husband, is running in that same seat all of a sudden this week. So that makes that a very interesting one. So we have Bruce Childers versus Robert Bender in a Republican primary in which right now would be the election.
So it'd be open to everybody.
Yeah, and it'd be an open primary. We have another one of those ECUA District 1 right now. It's two Republicans running against each other in an open primary, which that's interesting. You know, we don't have that all that often, but it's at least open. Everybody gets to vote in that. But how many people turn out for the primary election?
Right. And I mean, supervisor of election, how many people? It's an incredibly important position, of course, but how many people are really paying attention to that? It's just, Escambia County politics is so messy. Pam Childers' husband running against Robert Bender.
Absolutely.
Who she previously had beef with. I mean, it just makes me feel dirty.
Well, and to take the whole story one part further, okay, yesterday Chris Jones announced that he's not running for re-election as property appraiser. Says it's family stuff, and you know, I've talked to somebody who says that he was really trying to qualify and he really was not sure, like it was up to the last moment. But the cynical observer sees Chris drops out the day before qualifying ends. His subordinate, Bubba, who works for him, is now going to run and is almost certainly going to win without opposition. You see that, and you, even if you know Chris and don't believe they did it for the wrong reasons, even if you believe this is all done on the up and up for no scheme at all, you still think, shouldn't we have longer to decide? Shouldn't people have a chance to consider whether they run so we can actually have an election?
Is that a partisan seat? I know Chris is a Democrat.
It is a partisan seat.
Okay,
but he's a Democrat. Right. And yeah. So
I will say, though, from Chris's perspective, I did write him a check, so I hope he's writing it back to me. But he did call me and say that. I've always respected Chris.
I do, too. I'm very good at answering questions. He's always available. Good guy, right. I have no problem.
From my perspective, it seemed like he was definitely looking to run, and that's what he wanted to do. I mean, that's what he told me a while back that he was looking to do.
I just think we have so many things we actually do wrong that it'd be great if we took the opportunities to avoid the appearance of impropriety in cases where we're actually doing it right. And we haven't done a great job of that.
Well, here becomes the problem.
Hang on. Hold a thought for just a second. John Pickens got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're traveling southbound on Highway 90 through that construction zone heading to Pensacola, we're seeing some major delays there. Other than that, I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Go ahead, Grover.
I mean, to an extent, it's a rule issue that you're always going to have people file here and there right before the end. But the question would become, when you file now, you only have 60 days to get to the finish line versus if you had an earlier qualifying part. I mean, but qualifying is just part of the game. You say that you got to have it one way or the other.
Okay,
the same
so
time,
let me do my every once in a while soapbox, okay?
Yeah.
Instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting.
Yes.
So you got five candidates of various parties.
Yes.
Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You go the first round, nobody gets a majority. The number five vote getter goes away. Whoever voted for five gets their next choice. You get to a 51% somewhere and you're done. You don't have to deal with all of this primaries by party. You don't have to deal with this fake ghost candidates closing off access to elections. You actually get the candidates that the people choose by a majority.
I genuinely think, and this is not me being hyperbolic or sarcastic, I genuinely think ranked choice voting is the solution to American democracy.
And yet my party
is
almost universally against it. We just closed off another state. I think it was Maine, where they decided that it was going to be illegal to do ranked choice voting because
insane.
We want the two-party. We'd rather have this nonsense than the other thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the way you could get around that, Andrew, is you simply have open primaries. You come to a primary, everybody goes open. Whoever the top two people are, if they don't get 50%,
which would be that's a variant on the ranked choice
voting. Right. I mean, I would take that compromise.
I think that's the other way that you get around it on the open primary simps, and you kind of do it like the city does it,
right?
And then
you can have a designated party affiliation, but you don't have to control who gets to vote for whom.
You know, the funny thing is, in that one, you'd actually have people really philosophically in the idea of am I Republican or Democrat. You'd actually have the chance to see it in a more open way, and
you might genuinely Democrats vote for Republicans and vice versa, which is kind of what you want in a system, is to vote for the person, not only the party. Grover, Josh, thank you so much.
Dependable traffic on the fives weekdays on News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.